former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's hour two of the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings alongside Michael Lombardi. Stormy Bonantoni with you. We're live on VSiN and DraftKings Network. A great hour ahead. VSiN's own Matt Eumanns is going to join us coming up in just a little bit. Talk NFL, talk U.S. Open. We've got game two of the Stanley Cup Final coming up tonight. Can the Panthers go up 2-0 like the Boston Celtics did last night? We'll recap that game, give you some updated prices in the NBA Finals. But as we start in the NBA, we're actually not going to start with the Finals because we had some news that took over with Dan Hurley, head coach of the UConn Huskies, turning down a six-year, $70 million deal with the Los Angeles Lakers to give him and his team an opportunity to three-peat for a third straight national title. Michael, instant reaction when you heard the news.
Well, I'm not surprised because it's always hard to go from Storrs, Connecticut, to Los Angeles in terms of cost of living, expectations. I know they were willing to pay him a boatload of money, but it is the quality of life in terms of your family, what you're used to, the college atmosphere, which Hurley's been a part of for a long, long time, you know, going back to Wagner, to Rhode Island, and now at UConn. So it doesn't surprise me. I'm sure the UConn alumni who like to win, and because it's important to their basketball program to continue the continuity. And look, let's face it, the Lakers are not, you know, this rich organization that has incredible money like Steve Ballmer has across town, right? They're a mom-and-pop operation that has a lot of hands in the pie, and you've got one big superstar who's, you know, going to control all the money, and you become a, I don't want to say a, you become kind of have to fit into that. And I think to me, when you weigh all those in and then you look at the state taxes, not that Connecticut's no piece of cake in terms of state taxes, but I think it probably is the right decision at this time. I don't think it doesn't mean he wouldn't go somewhere else. I just am not sure the Lakers were the right job.
Well, you mentioned the excitement of UConn alumni. One of our bosses here at the network, John Goulet, is a UConn alum, and he may or may not have popped his head in during the commercial break, said some things that I can't repeat on television or radio, but was very, very excited. Let's just put it that way. So, yes, UConn is keeping Dan Hurley. They are a co-favorite right now, 10-1 on DraftKings to complete the three-peat, which is something that only one other man in college basketball history has been able to accomplish. So it's a very, very big feat if they're able to get there. Very special. And with that, Michael, his future of the Lakers and the position, do we go back to J.J. Redick now? What's next for the Lakers?
Well, we're going to find out, right? I mean, to me, they were promoting Redick all along. Shams thought they were headed down the Redick road until Woj dropped that bomb on them that it was Hurley. Do they continue down the college road until they find a great college coach that they feel like will take the deal? I doubt that. My sense of it is they interviewed everybody else to do their due diligence. It'll be who's ever from that other tier of candidates that they'll pick. But the guy coming in now is known to be the second one. You know, it's like, okay, we settled for you. We didn't really want you. We wanted Hurley. You got to overcome that. And the players know that too. So there's a little bit of how do you handle this, right? And if you've never coached before and you're J.J. Redick, you're going to have to really, you know, handle the adversity as it starts to come towards you early in your career because you're not there to expect it. It's fascinating how they let it out that they were going after Hurley. I thought when they let it out, they had him.
Yeah.
Like I would have never – they were keeping it under wraps for so long, right? Like why did they let it out, Stormy? Like could have kept it. Like you just think about it. And then let us know. And because when you let it out, all of a sudden now you expose yourself that you didn't close the deal.
And
you don't want to be turned down. The one thing you don't want in trying to hire a coach is to be turned down.
Well, and I was going to say, and of course, then that forced all of the UConn faithful and college basketball people to throw in their opinions on things with Dan Hurley and the pressure of one side or another. But I just think, maybe I'm silly for thinking this, how cool of a position is that to be if you're Dan Hurley or anybody in a position like this, to turn down the Lakers, to say, I'm going to turn down your $70 million. For, like, I just think that's got to be a very cool, gratifying feeling to be able to do something like that for an organization as historic as it is, to say, you know what, I really love what I am building here in UConn. My family loves it here, and we're going to continue this ride.
Yeah, I mean, quality of life does matter, right? When you have options. How much is enough money, right? How much is enough? Look, there's nothing like living in Manhattan Beach. It's beautiful. The weather's great. But there, it comes, you know, there's a great line. You're not a $70 million postman. I mean, you're going to have to deliver wins and not just mail. You're going to have to deliver things. And I think it's really challenging. And with that Laker roster and the limitations, and then across town, you have the richest man in the world, or one of them. And your franchise is month to month, basically. You know, the fact that they were willing to commit $70 million to him tells me that they were probably going to spread that money out. And, you know, look, I don't want anybody to cry for the Lakers, but they're not as heavily cash influxed as the Clippers are because of Ballmer and his ability to spend whatever he wants to spend.
All right, Michael, we'll talk about this again a little bit later on when Matt Youmans joins us, but let's stick with the theme of the NBA because game two of the finals came through last night. Boston takes a 2-0 lead. They win 105-98. A bad beat if you laid 7.5 with Boston. You are thanking your lucky stars if you got the best of the number and laid 6.5, because obviously that lands right on 7. The total stayed under the 215. And now the big question is, how do the Mavs respond at home? Are they able to get themselves back into this series? And I'm a little bit questionable about it just because of the way that the Celtics have looked. And maybe they were just a little bit of a sleeping giant as a team that had a ton of regular season success in the Eastern Conference. We know wasn't as competitive as we anticipated it being. The road to the finals for Boston, they faced injured stars every step of the way, but maybe they are as good as we thought they were, and they're proving it on the biggest stage here. How do you feel about things right now?
Well, I think, look, if you hold Boston to 25.6% shooting from the three-point line, you're saying to yourself, we got a chance to win, which they did, right? They had a chance to win the game. The problem is they turned the ball over too damn much. They turned it over 15 times to Boston's 10, and they shot worse from the three-point line than Boston did. Like, to me, they have to shoot 35% and hold Boston to 25 at the three-point. That's the way they're going to have to win the game. They're not getting the alley-oop dunks. They're not getting that. They're going to have to shoot well from that line, and they're not doing it. In two games, they haven't done it. Holiday's played really well in those two games, and he's been a difference defensively. So is Jaylen Brown. I mean, they can rotate guys, and White's made critical shots at critical times. I mean, he shoots 4-for-10 from the three-point line. Mm. And for all the talk about Tatum being the MVP, look, I think Tatum's a great player, but in two games, Tatum has not been the most productive player or the guy contributing the most towards winning on the court. I think he's a great player, but when you shoot 1-for-7, you're 6-for-22. You took 22 shots to get 18 points. You can't give him the MVP.
Despite the odds lengthening from -115 to +125, Tatum is still the favorite in that market right now for finals MVP. Jaylen Brown, his odds have been cut down a good chunk from +650 to the second shortest shot, +175. And how about Drew Holiday? If we're talking about a major cut down from 50-1 prior to the series beginning, now +750. And he, of course, was a lead scorer, 26 points this past game, had a breakout opportunity, called himself a utility guy, just doing whatever he can to help the team, considering the pressure that's on Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown being a little bit higher than the expectations for him. The updated price in the set, Boston now up to $8, -800 right now, Dallas +550 to ultimately come back. Now, last couple of minutes here, I do want to make sure that we're able to include what's on Michael's mind today. This is one of my favorite things that we do each and every day, finding out what is running through your head on a day-to-day basis. What do we have in store for the people at home today?
Well, I mean, what's on my mind is I wish I could hear you clearer, because this is driving me absolutely insane for a man who has only one good ear of hearing and not to be able to communicate with you and hear you precisely. But what's on my mind is this ridiculous Mike McDaniel. I'm going to start meetings at 24 years since the Dolphins have won a playoff game. Like, do you think one player cares about the 24? Like, if we're going to start the meeting with 24, that's going to resonate in the team. How about get the team healthy? How about work the team harder? How about not talk about it? How about just do it? right? It's all gimmicky. It's all just a little bit too far to the wrong side. Like, you know, you don't need, they don't have slogans in Kansas City. They don't need them. They just go work hard. They work really hard. You ask anybody who's been around the Chief program, they'll tell you that work, they work hard. They compete, they work hard. They're, whether you want to call them old school, new school, I don't care what you call them. They understand how the game is. They're not run by sports science. They're run by Andy Reid's ability to read his team. And I think when you start gimmicky, well, 24, we're going to start meetings to remind players. It's like when Buffalo, you know, 13 seconds. Mm. Look, you, what are you going to do? Just remind the players that we lost the game in 13 seconds? Do you think any of the players know the last time they won a playoff game or who was on the team? You know, it's ridiculous. It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me because it's too gimmicky and you can't get pro players to buy it. Oh, yeah, the reason we won is because we had 20, we were having our meetings at 24. Everybody was aware. They weren't aware last year? Then it says, that what were you doing as a coach? You didn't make them aware that they haven't won a playoff game in 23 years? What is this? Well, you mean somebody couldn't come up with a better idea inside that? I mean, he could have called me. I'd have given him a better idea. I promise you I'd have given him a better idea than that one. That one's bad.
Struggling to motivate. See, and for I got to say, for as much as I loved this What's on Michael's Mind, and it was a good one, it got you hot and heated, I kind of expected it to be that this was the anniversary of the Sopranos finale, but we didn't go there today.
No, because I'm too sad about that. Because I don't want to really acknowledge that it ended. Because I don't think Tony died, okay? I don't think he got shot.
I love it. We got to hit the break. Matt Eumanns is joining us. Did the Lakers come heavy enough? Maybe not, because Dan Hurley said no. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Start betting smarter with a VSiN Pro subscription. Right now, you can upgrade to VSiN Pro annual subscription for just $199, which is down from our usual price of $240. Plus, we're throwing in an extra month absolutely free. With a VSiN Pro subscription, you'll get exclusive access to premium analysis, expert picks, and advanced betting tools that'll give you an upper hand all year long. And here's the big news. Our NFL betting guide is coming out later this month. The guide is your ultimate resource for all things football season, packed with detailed team, division, and conference analysis. And of course, best bets for the upcoming year. Don't miss out on this limited time deal. Visit vsin.com/subscribe now and use the promo code Lombardi to claim your discount and bonus month. That's vsin.com/subscribe, the code Lombardi. Alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonatoni with you as we welcome you back to the Lombardi Line. The big news of the day coming out of the NBA and college hoops, that Dan Hurley has turned down a 6-year, $70 million deal. Does not go to the Los Angeles Lakers. He's staying at UConn and chasing a third straight national title. To help us break down that, the U.S. Open, and a whole lot more, we welcome in VSiN's own Matt Eumanns, host of VSiN Tonight from 8 to 11 Pacific, 11 to 2 Eastern on the Progressive Guest Line. Matt, did the Lakers not come heavy enough here? Why do you think Hurley ultimately says no, and are you surprised by the decision?
Not surprised at all. In fact, last week when I was on the Follow the Money show in the morning with Paul Howard, when the news broke about Hurley and the Lakers, I said he's not going there. I would be stunned if he took the Lakers job. And, you know, so this is the result I expected. Hey, he's got a big ego. He's looking for a new challenge, but it's just not the right time. And I think, you know, everybody likes to be the center of attention sometimes and likes to be courted. And like I said, with Dan Hurley, he's going to do the dance and he's going to play the game with the Lakers. And then he's going to stay at UConn. And when the time is right, he's going to take an NBA job. I will say this. If it were the Celtics offering a job, I think he would have taken it. His wife wants to stay on the East Coast. You know, his family has deep roots on the East Coast. And I just didn't think the Lakers were the right fit. And also, Stormy and Michael, I don't think the Lakers job is all that appealing right now. LeBron James is at the end of the road. Anthony Davis is kind of a broken down superstar. And I don't think the immediate future for the Lakers is all that bright. So I think Hurley made the right call to stay at UConn.
You know, Matt, if you're going to try to get a guy to leave, you don't make him the fourth, fifth, sixth highest paid coach in the NBA. I mean, Monty Williams right. is at $14 million. Tyronn Lue's over $12 million. I think Tyronn Lue's closer there. mean, 11 points, it seemed like you just came light. Like you're just trying to get PR that you wanted him. I'm sure it was a hard decision for him, but like 6 years, $70 million never seemed like enough money unless they really felt like he was never going to, you know, turn him down because of the brand.
Yeah, that's the other point, too, that I didn't talk about is I thought the Lakers were going to come with like a 7-year, $100 million offer. And then it makes it a little tougher for Hurley to turn that down. But he didn't get that huge offer that we had heard rumored. So I think that also probably played into the decision. But I never thought Hurley was going to go. And you're right. If they had come with $100 million over 7 years, maybe it's a different outcome. But I also think the Lakers kind of wanted to play this game with Hurley. And now they're going to turn to J.J. Redick and say, hey, we tried to get Dan Hurley. It fell through. Now we're going to get LeBron's choice and J.J. Redick. Who knows if that's what's happening behind the scenes, but that's what I expect to happen next.
Well, we'll see what happens for the Lakers. As of right now, UConn 10-1 to ultimately secure the three-peat in college hoops. Let's switch gears here, Matt, to the U.S. Open. Tees off Thursday at Pinehurst in North Carolina. Scottie Scheffler here today, June 10th, has 5 wins, a record $24-plus million in the bank this season. First player since 1980 to have 5 wins before the U.S. Open. A +320 favorite. Rory's the second shot at 10-1. He's -120 top 5, -250 for a top 10. How good is this guy right now? And if you can't bet Scheffler at these odds, where else do you look?
Well, I mean, that's a dilemma for golf handicappers right now. Is you don't want to bet a guy at +350, even you're saying +320 at some spots to win a U.S. Open, a field loaded with elite players. How do you play +350? I can't do it. So I have to look a little bit further down the board. This past weekend at Jack Nicklaus's tournament, the Memorial, I played Colin Morikawa 16-1, and I had Morikawa to finish top 10, too, at +130. And then I also hedged on Scottie Scheffler over the weekend when it looked like Scheffler was going to win, just because you get tired of having your brains beat in by Scottie Scheffler winning all the time when you got potential big payouts out there with other players like Morikawa. I was not surprised he came up short, but I'll tell you what, I'm going to look at Morikawa again. I'm going to look at a couple of the same players. If you want to bet Scottie Scheffler +350, I'm not going to discourage anyone from doing that. It's just tough to do that in golf betting and come out ahead in the long run. But Scheffler is going to be there on the weekend. I think Colin Morikawa is going to be there. I love the form he was in coming into the Memorial last week, and I'm going to stick with him again because he was that close to knocking off Scheffler and winning that thing. If he was a little bit more aggressive on the back nine on Sunday afternoon, he had a great shot to win that tournament. So I'm going to come back with Morikawa. Stormy, I'm coming back with Bryson DeChambeau, who I had in the PGA, and he was the runner-up, the bridesmaid. DeChambeau, I had at 28-1 in that major. I think he's going to contend again in this U.S. Open. It's going to be a tough layout. A similar course layout to what we saw in Louisville this week at Pinehurst. So I think DeChambeau fits the profile of a potential winner. I'll give you a long shot, and that's Matt Fitzpatrick, who's around 50-1. Fitzpatrick's a former U.S. Open winner, has not been in good form, but he really came on strong at the end of the Memorial on the weekend and started to show signs he's playing a lot better. So I'll say Morikawa, DeChambeau, and right now Matt Fitzpatrick, a few of the guys I'm looking at this week.
Matt, will this course play like Pinehurst typically does, where we're going to see scores just around, you know, even par, maybe slightly under? Have they changed the course to where it'll make it a little bit less difficult?
Well, I think, first of all, with your drives, you got to stay in the fairway. You got to stay out of the rough because rough is going to be deep, and you're going to get penalized if you're not hitting fairways. I think the score is going to be very similar to what we saw at Jack Nicklaus's tournament this past weekend, where, you know, you had your leaders up around 6, 7, 8, 9 under par. I think that's probably what we're going to see this week. And yeah, it's going to be a tough layout. I don't know how tough yet. We actually got a VSiN subscriber, Mac Bridger, who lives on the course at Pinehurst. And I'm going to get him on a show this week to talk about that too, because I want to find out how difficult this course is really going to be. We heard the PGA was going to be a brutal setup, and it turned out not to be the case. It turned out to be really easy. And too easy for a lot of those players. So I think Pinehurst is going to be a lot tougher just based on how U.S. Open courses are typically laid out.
Host of VSiN Tonight every weeknight here on VSiN, Matt Youmans joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. And correct me if I'm wrong, Matt, but a little birdie told me you have a blind resume to share with Michael Lombardi here today. What do we got?
All right, I want you two to guess who these two quarterbacks are. I've been doing a lot of NFL work, and I was looking at the last four games of last season for a lot of quarterbacks in the league, and a couple of them jumped out at me. I got quarterback A and quarterback B, and both around 60% completions. Quarterback A had 8 touchdowns, no interceptions, and his team was 3-1 in the final four games. Quarterback B, 7 touchdowns, 7 picks, and his team was 0-4 in the final four games. Do you know who quarterback A and quarterback B would be?
My guess on quarterback B was Nick Mullins, just because he threw for a ton of yards and he also gave the ball away. Quarterback A one, I'm going to guess Lamar, but that's the only one. I have a feel. Stormy?
Quarterback B, I feel like maybe Trevor Lawrence. I know he was bad the back end of the year, but they didn't go 0-4 down the stretch. Oh, but Beathard started a game, so maybe Trevor Lawrence. I have no idea on quarterback one.
Very good, very good. Trevor Lawrence, quarterback B. They lost all 4 of his final 4 starts. And, you know, I keep hearing Trevor Lawrence is a generational talent. He's a, you know, $50 million plus quarterback. Look at those numbers at the end of last season. You know who quarterback A is on that list? 4th round draft pick, Aiden O'Connell of the Raiders.
Oh, God.
And the worst of his final 4 games is that game in Kansas City that day when obviously he didn't have a touchdown pass. But that's Aiden O'Connell.
He didn't complete a pass in the second half in that game.
I know. But that's what he did in the final 4 games. 8 touchdowns, no picks. Compare that to Trevor Lawrence. And I think that's comical. I just some numbers I was breaking down on quarterbacks and how they performed at the end of last season. Who would believe that, right?
That's unbelievable.
Well, I mean, yeah. Look, Lawrence, I wrote a column about this, too. I mean, 4 of those 8 touchdowns Aiden O'Connell got was in the Charger game that they scored 60-some points on. So, you know, I mean, that game was over, but I get your point here. To me, the better one for me, I keep saying this is, you know, we think Trevor Lawrence is generational, but Brock Purdy just kicks his butt in every single category, right. But nobody wants to love on him.
Yeah, I know. I agree. All right. Hey, great talking with you two today. Thanks.
Thanks, Matt. Yeah, unfortunately, that music means we got to stop yapping. plenty more to come. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's about that time. Father's Day is upon us. From groan-worthy dad jokes to patching up skinned knees, you know your dad is one of a kind. This Father's Day, give him a gift that's guaranteed to make him happy. Omaha Steaks. Packages start at $99 when you go to omahasteaks.com and use the promo code VSIN at checkout to get $10 off your order. Show your dad the love he deserves with a gift as unforgettable as he is. Visit omahasteaks.com and use the promo code VSIN at checkout. I don't know why. Every time I think about Omaha Steaks, I just want to say, Omaha, it's time for Step Into My Office. Let's roll it.
The appointments are lined up.
You waiting for somebody in there?
Got an appointment.
And it's not about what you want to hear, but what you need to hear.
It's not personal. It's strictly business.
It's time you and me had a private talk winger. Step into my office.
It's Step Into My Office with Michael Lombardi. Mr. Lombardi, we'll see you now.
All right, let's start with Jason Kidd, head coach of the Dallas Mavericks, stepping into the office here, Michael. The Mavs are down 0-2 for the first time in this playoffs. They've dropped these first two games in Boston by a combined 25 points. Kyrie hasn't looked like himself. And you look at the stats, historically, only 5 teams have come back from an 0-2 finals deficit in the history of the NBA. How can Jason Kidd push the right buttons as this series heads back to Dallas? What's the message need to be?
Well, one of those 5 teams were Bill Walton's Portland Trailblazers, who came storming back against the Philadelphia 76ers in 1977. So not that I remember, but just FYI for a little background, Stormy. Look, if you're Jason, it's just about we got to play really good for 4 quarters. We can't have a letdown, and we really got to shoot well. We can't be afraid to shoot, but we have to shoot better. We have got to get our three-point shooting up to 35%, 34. We've got to shoot like we did in the regular season where we were making our three-pointers, like we were shooting in the Clippers series or like we were shooting in the Timberwolves series. We must be able to, because if we can't, the game becomes harder for Kyrie. The game becomes harder for Luka. And I think if you're Jason has to continue to stress there isn't a moment that we can relax in the game. There isn't a moment where we can catch our breath, because this is a very good team who's highly competitive, who's got their foot on the gas, and they're going to keep charging. And there's no lead that they don't think they can overcome because they can shoot threes. They walked off the court last night saying, we won, but shot 25% from what we do, the best thing we do, which is the three-point line. But what happened in the game? They made critical three-pointers when it mattered. And that was ultimately the difference of the game, why that game, they could never close it down. White's two three-pointers to get it back to double digits, or Holiday and White, were the difference of the game.
Had a chance to make it close at the end of the game, but too little, too late. Dallas now a two-point favorite hosting the Celtics in Game 3 coming up on Wednesday. From one Jason to another, Jason Tatum and his Boston Celtics squad obviously up 2-0 right now, but he has been criticized for his ineffectiveness as a scorer. He still remains the favorite in the MVP market for the NBA Finals. He's shooting 31.6% from the field, but is also averaging 10 rebounds and 8.5 assists these two games. Michael, if you're talking to Jason Tatum today, how can he quiet the outside noise and get to the ultimate goal of winning a title?
I think, Jason, you have to stop trying to be the MVP in every game. You just got to be a good player. Like, you just have to stop launching 22 shots, which could have gotten us beat, and just play, let the game come to you. You're chasing the MVP title, even though you're coming out to the press conferences saying it's just about winning and no one's going to divide our team. You're acting as if you want to become the MVP. There's no reason for you to do that. You have too good of a team, and you could play off it. The game should be easier for you, and you're making it harder. And I think that's because you're chasing something bigger than winning the game itself. Yes, you're a great player. You're one of the best players in the NBA. No one's going to take that away from you. Why are you letting other people judge you as opposed to what you bring to the table? Half of them can't see what you do behind the scenes in terms of your ability to play defense, your ability to anchor, your ability to help the team in little ways. It doesn't have to be scoring. And if you're not shooting well, don't shoot. Other guys are going to make it. You can contribute in a lot of different ways. But I think it starts with your expectations of yourself. And I think you got to move away from, oh, I'm the best player on the court. No, you're not. Not right now. You're the most talented player, but you're not the best player. But you're the best player is when you let the game come to you, not you chase the game.
Plus 125, his price right now as the NBA Finals MVP. And I will say one thing about the Celtics. They have depth, and it is proven, all of the talent that they have all around that team. Joe Douglas, GM of the New York Jets, is stepping in the office today. And, Michael, we've talked a lot about how this offseason, when you move on from Bryce Huff, you trade one contract issue for another. So the Eagles bring in Hassan Reddick, who is already pushing for a new deal. It's unclear if Reddick is going to be there at Jets mandatory minicamp that begins tomorrow. If you're Joe Douglas, how should you handle this problem? And hey, like, let's avoid this happening again, shall we? What are you telling Joe Douglas today?
Like, Joe, you can't make a trade for a player who you know is unhappy until you talk to the player. Now, I know you worked for Howie. You know how Howie operates. Howie Roseman, the general manager of the Eagles. Like, for you to get duped into taking his problem on your hands, you know, and you gave him Huff, and everybody says, well, you know, they were strong. They couldn't do it with the cap. That's nonsense. You could do anything you want with the cap. You may have been able to hold off, but you knew Philly was after Huff. And why you would take Riddick without having a contract, I don't know. But you're going to have to clean up the mess. Now, the mess could be your owner doesn't want to pay him any more money. And if you didn't get that checked out with the owner before you made this trade, that's going to put you in a double jeopardy situation where he's going to be mad at you. Because you have two negotiations. You have one with Woody and you have one with Riddick's agent. And you're going to have to find a way to come to peace. And it seems to me like, from an outside observer, that's exactly what happened. Woody doesn't want you to give him any more money, and you know you need to give him more money. So you have a double problem on your hand. And the reason you do is because you weren't being proactive. I know you were desperate to get Riddick, but Riddick wasn't going anywhere. Riddick was available to every team in the league. and Howie just dumped them on you. So you got to figure out a way to solve the problem. But in the future, making the kind of money that you make, $6 million a year, you got to anticipate problems, not react to them. And you're reacting right now.
So uncharacteristic for such a well-run organization. Psych. Okay, let's
shocking.
Go to WNBA. Caitlin Clark, of course, we've talked about it a ton on this show, as has the entire country, the unprecedented level of attention that she has brought on the women's game of basketball. She did not make Team USA. She was not selected for the Olympics this summer. Fever head coach Christy Sides told reporters that Clark told her they woke a monster as she learned the news, albeit when we heard from Clark in her press conference availability with the media, it seemed like she handled that moment masterfully. How should she internally be handling this disappointing news and coming out of the break after everybody else comes back from the Olympics in her best form?
I think the one great thing you have going for you is you always need a villain in your life. We all need villains in our life. We all need something that when we wake up in the morning is going to motivate us. It's going to strive us to be the best version we can. Tom Brady won 6 Super Bowls with the Patriots, one with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and he had a villain every single day when he woke up. We call it resistance, right? Resistance is when our mind tells us we don't need to do something. You know, we don't need to get out of bed too early. We've won. You know, we don't need to go run extra because we've already run. And it's not, and all that resistance does is build us to become the less version of ourselves. They just gave you a gift. They just gave you a gift to defeat resistance. Because as talented, as competitive as you are, when somebody tells you no, like when UConn said you can't attend their school, you're going to have to go to Iowa, you decided to make them pay for that decision. I think you'll make them pay for this decision moving forward. It's the greatest thing ever. Embrace it. Relish it. Enjoy it. Because that'll bring the best version of yourself out.
It can be a pretty dangerous combination when you have that type of talent, work ethic, and now motivation mixing into the fold. Love it. And Caitlin Clark, of course, coming off a 30-point game as well, her last one with the Fever. Last one here. Let's send Jeannie Buss to the office after we found out the news today that the Lakers were not able to close a deal with UConn head coach Dan Hurley. What are you telling her? What are you advising her as it pertains to this coaching search? And what's next for the Lakers after, I would say, getting a little bit embarrassed here, having someone not accept your offer?
Jeannie, never, ever, 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 ever offer a coach that you don't know the answer is yes. It's like you got to think of yourself being a teenager in high school. Don't go ask a girl out on a date until you know the answer. You don't want to be embarrassed. You don't want to walk around the halls with your head down. That's what you're doing. You're walking around the halls with your head down because you just got turned down. And you didn't even offer enough money. That's the thing. You're going to get criticized for being cheap, which is really what it is. You offer somebody $11 million a year when Monty Williams, for the worst team in basketball, the Detroit Pistons, is making $14 million. What do you think that answer is going to be? Did you offer more or significantly more than Bud got to go to the Phoenix Suns? I don't think you did. So, like, you went in there, you almost expected to hear the no. Plus, to me, now you got to clean up a mess. And this is hard to do. Hard to clean up this mess because now the guy coming in knows he was number two.
And now we know the terms that were being offered. So are you going to hand that contract over to a coach that's never been a head coach before? There's a lot of other layers to this as well. So we're going to hit the break, closing things up here on the Lombardi Line when we come back. Lots of NFL stuff to get into. Which of these playoff teams from last year that's favored to miss the playoffs could be worth a bet? We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We are this close to crowning an NBA champ, and with the action heating up on the court, it's even hotter at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the code VSiN, that's V-S-I-N. That code for new customers gets you a $150 bonus bet when you bet just $5. Only at DraftKings, the crown is yours. We're wrapping things up here on the Lombardi Line, live on VSiN and DraftKings Network. Michael Lombardi and Stormy Bonantoni with you as we hit our pro tip of the day like we do each and every day here on the show. If you are looking for tips specifically from our show, make sure you head to VSiN.com. You can search Lombardi Line or the specific sport that you are looking for. But today's pro tip comes from our good friend Michael Calabrese, who joined us in hour one as we were talking a little college football. He gave us a good idea. Pay attention when analyzing some of these former Group of Five teams that are moving up to different power conferences this year in conference realignment. The market might be undervaluing their talent or overvaluing in some spots. And his example was SMU this year. He likes their over 7.5 wins. This is a team that won the American Conference last year. They return almost everyone of note from an 11-3 team. And he said if they were still playing in the American Conference, their win total would probably be closer to 9.5, 10.5. He thinks it's a significant adjustment in an ACC conference now that is a little bit down. And I think that's interesting, Michael, especially because we talk so much about honing in on these conferences and becoming familiar with realignment. There could be a lot of opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a ton of opportunities. And I think you've got to understand it. You really got to handicap the conferences. And the only way you can do that is to study all the teams in the conference. And I think that's really important. That's why I think college football is like pro football. Pick 32 teams that you want to study, and they have to be from the same conference. So that means you're really limited to about 2.5 conferences or 3 at the most. You know, if you pick the MAC, that's not hard to go through. And then the Southeast Conference or the Big 12 or something like that. Because if you try to do all the teams in all these conferences, you're going to fall flat and it's not going to work.
Yeah, it's overwhelming. You got to dial in and become an expert in your selective leagues. I 100% agree with you. And again, just to close out the thought on SMU, he talked about not only the returning production, but the returning staff with the head coach, both coordinators, their strength and conditioning coach coming back. A lot of these key things to take into account in addition to what is on paper one of the easier Power Four now schedules. Again, VSiN Pro Tips available at VSiN.com. Let's get into a little NFL here because we had an idea this past week to look at teams that made the playoffs last year that now on DraftKings Sportsbook are favored to miss the postseason. One of those teams is the Pittsburgh Steelers, who a little bit ago we saw on Twitter, the Pittsburgh Steelers have announced they are signing Mike Tomlin to a 3-year extension that'll take him through 2027. But this is a team last year that ended up with 10 wins. They ended up in the playoffs. But you look at their schedule this year, it is a gauntlet the back end of the year. The division with which they play in is very, very challenging. Many people think this is the first year that Tomlin does have a losing season. Plus 185 to make the playoffs, minus 235 to miss. How are you breaking down the Steelers' postseason chances in 2024?
Well, I think it's all schedule related because I think ultimately they're a better team than they were last year, and they won 10 games with no quarterback, right? Mason Rudolph came in late in the year, and T.J. Watt got hurt on them. So, look, I'm not going to be convinced the schedule will determine the win losses. It's what we have to talk about at this time of the year because we're limited. We don't have games. So we talk about the potential of hard games down the road. When I don't know if the Ravens are going to be a hard game on a Saturday, maybe if they have a bunch of injuries, or what about the Eagles? What happens if Jalen Hurts isn't playing and you got Kenny Pickett? How are you thinking about that game? You know, what about the Chiefs? If the Chiefs have Carson Wentz coming into play at Christmas Day, I don't know. I'm not trying to get anybody hurt. I just tend to not look at schedules and say, it's so hard. Every game's hard. Why is Survivor so challenging for everybody? Because you can't predict. But yet we can look at the Steelers' schedule and predict easily that they're not going to win that because they have too many hard games. So if this is the case, then the Steelers should be the poster child for Survivor, especially late in the year. I don't buy that.
Perception did move the market. While their season win total stayed at 8.5, it was minus 130 to the over, now plus 125. What did you make of the Steelers extending Tomlin, though? I know this was a big talking point at the end of last season.
Well, I think it was – I mean, look, when you have a good coach, and you better keep that coach, why would you get rid of him? Mm-hmm. Like, the question is, who's better than Tomlin out there? You know, like, that's what I said about Belichick. Like, who's better than Belichick? Well, he can't win without Brady. Okay, can Tomlin win without Big Ben? Yeah, he can. They can all win if you get the right team. They're good coaches. They're hard to find. And so, like, when you get a good one, why would you want to go through it? I think if he would sign for 30 years, I'd sign him for 30. I mean, he's too good of a coach. I know some of the people in the analytical community don't like his game management, but I know, contrary to popular opinion, other than themselves, there's no perfect coach out there. And I think he's really good. And the fact he can win games and his team takes on his personality, which is what you want. right? You want your team to be tough, to be physical, and to be willing to play in close games into the fourth quarter.
You mentioned the quarterback, Michael, and I think that's so important about this Pittsburgh Steelers team. They have had abysmal quarterback play the last 2 years, and they've still come out having winning seasons, and I think that's a big credit to what Tomlin has been able to accomplish as a head coach. Let's see what they can do this year with the interesting combo of Russell Wilson and Justin Fields. How about the Cleveland Browns? They're plus 150 to make the postseason this year, minus 185 to miss. Had an 11-6 season last year, went through five different quarterbacks. Joe Flacco ends up leading them to the postseason late in the year, but Deshaun Watson supposed to be back healthy. What are your thoughts on their playoff odds?
You're going to have a hard time. I like the Brownies. I'm just not sold that that's what they're going to do. I think they got to take a step back. I don't know where Nick Chubb is. And I think losing Billy Callahan as the offensive line coach hurts. I think the change of offensive staff hurts. And I'm not sold here that the culture within that building is so good, considering the fact that Watson, it seems like he's dictating a lot of these moves. And so that troubles me because he hasn't played well. Look, I was a huge Deshaun Watson fan coming out of Clemson. I would have picked him if I were the Browns before they traded the pick away to the Houston Texans. That's how the Texans were able to get him. But to me, where he's let me down is his off-the-field behavior, character, and it hasn't really, in terms of the changes around this coaching staff, are all to try to make him become a better player.
Let's go to the NFC South. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers plus 140 to make the playoffs, minus 180 to miss, coming off a year where year one under Baker Mayfield, they end up beating the Eagles 32-9 in the wild card round, a close loss in Detroit there in round two. What do you think about their opportunity here, bringing back Baker and Evans there on offense?
You know, I was looking at when Matt came in with his who was the guy, right? Who are these two quarterbacks? I was kind of thinking it through, and I was looking at it, and I thought maybe one of those quarterbacks is Derek Carr because he played really well late in the season, right? And it wasn't, but then when you look at Carr's last four or five games, he was unbelievable. Other than the Rams game when everything was on the line, you know. So I really think the Saints are the best team in the South. So I think it's going to be hard for the Bucs. I mean, look, they went into Tampa last year in week 17 and won that game. They won that game, and they won it convincingly. It wasn't as close as the 23-13 score indicated.
The Saints are plus 340 in the NFC South, and I don't know if you agree or disagree with this, but I don't see two teams making the postseason from that division. So if you do like the Bucs to get back to the playoffs as well, plus 310 is going to be the better price than that plus 145 to make the playoffs. I do want to hit you with one more here real quickly before we have to end the show. The Los Angeles Rams, and I think I already know your answer here, but they made the postseason last year when a lot of people doubted them, thought they would not. They end up losing by a single point in the wild card round in Detroit. To make the playoffs, it's even money. To miss is minus 120. Could the Rams be a playoff team?
I think they are a playoff team. I think they're going to be good. I think they've improved their defensive front. I know losing Aaron Donald's hard to do, right? I mean, that's impossible. But I do think they're going to be better. And I think as long as Stafford stays healthy, this is one of those teams that I look at on the schedule and say, okay, I don't really want to play them early. I definitely don't want to play them early. I'd rather play them late. I want to see how Stafford holds up. They got to handle that contract, see where he is. He's going to want to get paid. But I do think coaching, quarterbacking, and the roster. Now, Chris Shula's got to come through defensively like Raheem Morris did, but I think they're a better team.
If Kobe Turner steps up on defense and Puka Nacua continues to grow off of the amazing season that he had a year ago, I definitely think that this Rams team is going to be one to contend with here. And that's unfortunate for me as a 49ers fan who would love San Francisco to continue their run in the NFC West.
Don't give up so easy, Stormy. Come on, that's not like you.
I'm just saying I wish for their failure. It's fine. Great show, my friend. Appreciate your time, as always. We'll be back here tomorrow, same time, same place. If you haven't gotten your full football fill, have no fear. Coming up next on DraftKings Network, it's Ross Tucker's football show. And on VSiN, Patrick Maher and the Sharp Money Crew. Have a great day.